This series is made possible in part by a grant from IMS, Interdisciplinary Metropolitan Systems, Incorporated.
The following program is from NET.
It's Soul, and this is your announcer, Joe Dennis. And tonight on Soul, part two of a conversation between James Baldwin and Dickie Giovanni. And here again is the producer of Soul, Ellis Hazel.
Thank you, Joe, and good evening. I'm Ellis Hazel, the producer of Soul, and I welcome you to the second half of this conversation between Dickie Giovanni and James Baldwin. As I mentioned last week, we taped this interview in London recently and edited it for showing at this time. You will see and hear two very gifted and much loved black writers thinking, questioning, and exchanging ideas with all the eloquence and wit and passion that have brought them to national and indeed international prominence. So now let us resume this dialogue, this conversation between Dickie Giovanni and James Baldwin.
How do we as a people begin to deal?
What we had to do, and it's a very difficult uphill job, Nikki. What you have to do is begin to change the basis on which people think. For example, you have to begin to shift the basis of the language. Because the way people speak is also the way they think.
Yeah.
I haven't got to point out to you because you know the English spoken by black Americans is not the English spoken by white Americans.
Yeah, that's true.
No. And once that, so that's given, and we have to use it and do something with it which has not been done before. You know?
Mm-hmm.
We are in great trouble, but we have the great advantage of knowing we're in great trouble. You know, we're in trouble man to woman, man to man. We're in trouble, you know, father to son, mother to daughter. But we know we are. If I can liberate my great nephew, if black people can liberate themselves. And since we're talking about a commercial endeavor, too, by the way, you know, because the great crisis is we have no land and no money.
That resides in power.
Yeah, we'll get...
Because you find out you cannot purchase anything you can't take.
We'll get the power.
You know what I mean?
We'll get the power.
You must.
No, we'll get the power.
And the power is not the land or the money.
I know that.
The power is the ability to effect.
But now you are agreeing with me.
Of course. You're wise, man.
What?
You're a wise man. Why wouldn't I?
Wow.
No, and one of the strengths of the Afro-American, certainly the last 20, 30 years, is that we have recognized we are not Americans. On one hand. On the other hand, we are the only true inheritors
of
the place called America.
That's right. It belongs to us.
Because we are still outside of it.
It belongs to us, and there's nobody can do anything about that.
And we will get it.
Oh,
if we continue to move. I think it's a guilt.
In ways that one can't quite see yet. We already have it. That's one of the reasons for the panic.
We have to effect it.
Yes.
We have to know it, and we have to make sure that everybody else...
We have to change it.
Sure. It's like the South lost the Civil War, but they didn't know it, which is why they continued. Until someone finally said, you know, you lost. And, oh, did we? You know what I mean? They continued to act as if they had won.
Well, they still haven't lost it, because that war was a kind of...
Yeah.
The results of that war are being paid for until today.
And will be paid for.
When he marched in Montgomery, Governor Wallace had the... Confederate flag flying with the state from the Capitol building.
Oh, yes.
Which is legally insurrection. But nobody said a word about it. Because, in fact, the South and North simply concluded a contract between them to keep you and me in slavery.
Yeah.
That's all that really happened. So the textile mills in Manchester and Massachusetts got rich, and the cotton fields got rich. Where did the textiles come from, except from Mississippi?
But see, so many institutions to me are not but so many institutions, like, it just doesn't make that much difference that Shirley Chisholm is in Congress or Richard Brooke is in the...
Well, it's what I mean when I say, you know, the white and black are really very arbitrary categories which cannot be trusted.
Well, certain things have certain color designations.
Well, the fact that Ed Brooke is a senator from Massachusetts, or that we have some black mayors, since it doesn't change the machine... Doesn't change the parties which they allegedly represent, doesn't mean anything. I'm saying you can't tell a black man by the color of his skin.
Or maybe you can't tell. Maybe my quarrel is very subtle, but maybe I'm saying you can't tell a white man by the color of his.
Either.
Yeah.
Either. In that case, there's a great deal of hope.
If you could get a black mayor to come in and change, which I think Carl Stokes did, change the police department, change the way that the city goes about its services, then you could have something. But if he's not going to change it, first of all, the militia, which becomes the police department, if he's not willing to make those kind of changes, or if he's not willing to, let's say, take on the McCarran Act, then he's just not doing black people any...
Or the country.
Well,
no.
It's one and the same.
No, it's one. In my mind, it's one and the same.
It's one and the same. Because, well, that's true.
I'm not trying to... I'm not being a missionary trying to save America. But I do know that we have paid too much for it to be able to abandon it.
We can never abandon it. I don't think that that's a question, because where else are we going to go? I mean, nobody else wants us.
In any case, my father and my father's father's paid too much for it.
I've paid too much for it. I'm only 28.
Yes.
I deserve it, you know, to do whatever I want to do with it. Thomas deserves it, you know, whatever that means. I just think that, like, how we go about it and what we're, I'm just not interested in many things that people are interested in. I'm not interested in a president or a Congress.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't care Puerto Rican, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't care. I just don't give a damn. Because it's still somebody trying to run my life. I'm not interested in movements and ideologies. Because I think that I would have a difficult time. No matter
who
was
running. You have a terrible
time. Yeah, I mean, personally,
I would too.
It wouldn't change one bit for me, except maybe I would even have to go in exile and I can live there now.
But you see, that's a tightrope that we're on. It's, again, if we come back to the whole question of, you know, of labels, white and black, I'm terrified of cultural commissars, you know, on either side of the line.
Yeah.
You know.
The older you get, the more frightening.
It's terrifying because, you know, I'm much sure I'll be told how to write, you know, or what to write about.
But that's a stupid... my theory is that the world divides into sort of like intelligent and weak and strong, which is awful. I mean, it's really awful of me to say things like that. But there's so many stupid people.
It divides not so much between the stupid and the bright, because most bright people that I've encountered, not most perhaps, but many, are wicked. I really think it, you know, really wicked.
Maybe.
But I think it divides between the people who have a certain kind of daring and the people who don't. And the daring is involved with the price you're prepared to pay for your life. For your life.
Okay.
Because then you may have been born stupid, but if you're willing to live, take your chances on living, you become very bright.
Yeah. But then in my world, that becomes a bright person.
Yes, of course.
Because it's not based on IQ.
No.
That's just, you know, that's like a very weak position people get into when they start. Well, in the States, we have a thing. I don't know how familiar you are with it. But we're going through a whole thing. There is no such thing as individual. Which, of course, is
that's
killing the
true.
Movement. Well, it's not only not true, it's stupid. It's killing the movement. And when you see the dum-dums perpetuating that, you don't want to be like them. So the very bright people are saying, okay, you all can have. Mm-hmm. And I hate to watch it happen because it's destroying what was almost at one point a nation. You know?
It's not... Be cool. Be cool. This won't... I'm not trying... I don't mean be tranquil.
Yeah.
No. But let it go. Don't worry. What you have to do is concentrate on what is essential. And not be sidetracked by very disturbing details. After all, you know and I know that the individual does exist.
Not only does, but should.
In any case, whether or not he should, he does.
I'm concerned about it, I guess, particularly because there's so many young kids who want to believe. And for me, when I look at, like, the energy, you know, I teach school. And when I look at my various classes, the few times that I'm there, and I see those hopeful little faces, and I know that they are just as eager to become, you know, fascists as anything else, that they don't really, what they want is to believe. Then I begin to feel an obligation to say, okay, try believing in yourself.
Yes, but my dear, that's all we've been talking about.
Yes.
You know, you call it power, and you call it power, I call it morals, or you say I do.
No, okay,
But it's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing. What one is trying to do is to teach those children something which they will need much, much later, because they can become fascists very easily. Especially if they really believe, you know, that all the legends which are now being fed, you know, that black is beautiful. Black is beautiful. But since it's beautiful, you haven't got to say so. You know,
it's very important. The ego is the most important thing about exemplifying that beauty.
Because it's a very dangerous slogan. I mean, I happen to, you know, I'm very glad that it came along, because it had to come along. But, you know, I don't love all black people, really, you know.
Okay.
You know, I know some deacons and preachers and congressmen and judges and teachers and lawyers, you know, black, but not like me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you're trying to tell the child something which transcends all those categories. So he won't become what you see all around you every day.
One tries.
You know.
But that has to be dealt with, because they're constantly being fed that their ego mm-hmm. is to be supplemented to what is constantly called the energy, which makes no sense to me. Because why should somebody who doesn't even know you run your life? You know, I mean, why should I run some kid's life? And I feel, you know, eminently equipped. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I feel like, wow, I would be the best person. But why should I do that? Why can't you do it? You can make your own mistakes.
Yeah, but you have to give the kid the morale which will allow him to do it.
One tries.
You know.
Because I really see so many games being run by uncreative, stupid people.
Look,
you
Nikki,
know? And it's very disgusting. I'm sure that you all saw it.
No, yes.
But Jesus.
But Nikki, most people really accept without very much question the assumptions that they're given.
But they must. I mean, it's illogical.
Most, when I was growing up, you know, the great trick was getting the civil service and work for the post office. You know, now I can't blame those people.
I don't blame them.
You know, it made them very unattractive people from my point of view. You know, but what else was a black cat to do?
Create something.
No. You can't create anything unless you have been given, however you get it, I don't know, been given the belief or the rage or the madness or whatever, the necessity out of yourself to do it. Look, read a book by Richard Wright. The late Richard Wright wrote a book called Lord Today. Which I meant to get for you today. It's about the post office. Well, it's not about the post office. It takes place in a post office.
Right.
No.
Great.
It's a tremendous, tremendous book. It's one day in the life of one black man. And no black cat can read that and not know, you know, because it's true. It's true. It's a fantastic record, you know. You see, the nature of the drama, in a sense, is that you and I both had to raise a child, but if I've been destroyed before I get home, you go one way, I go another, and the kid gets lost. And it isn't the fault of the woman or the man, and certainly not the fault of the kid.
It's not a question of blame, though. It's a question of responsibility.
Yeah, but
and it is our responsibility to make sure that kid does not go.
But what I'm trying to get at, Nikki, is that in order to take the responsibility, you had to be able to take the responsibility. It's not a mystical act. Somebody's got to pay the rent, and I can't put you on the streets.
That's what you say. We have tried to make you able to pay your rent, or my rent, or our rent. We have found that there are not enough jobs, there is not enough money for you to do that. Now, why can't we try it my way? I think that the only thing that's changed in the last, since Martin Luther King, since 54, I think the only thing that's really changed is the black woman. And what she has said...
No, I don't think she's changed. I think she's become more visible.
I think she's changed. Because there was a time, let's say my mother, you know what I mean, my aunts and things like that, they would say, okay, if that's the way you establish your manhood, mm-hmm. I'm going to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
my generation says, hey...
Mm-hmm.
No good.
Okay.
You must
okay.
establish
I'll
a
agree.
New base.
I'll agree with
and,
that.
And we are, as a group, demanding that a new base be established.
Yeah, but be careful as a woman of what you demand of a man.
I demand that he be a man.
Yeah, but you can't
because
say, you,
the
but
provision
you can't,
part...
Yeah, but you can't say you demand it. You have to suggest it.
Well, that's your ego that says that. No, I demand it. Now, you deal with that.
All right. Okay.
I demand.
I'll even go with that.
I demand that you be a man. And I don't think that that's asking too much. Because if I wanted a provision... You know, so I would get a camper. You know what
mm-hmm,
I mean?
Mm-hmm,
I would
mm-hmm.
get a camper that provides things. You know what I mean? You get an army surplus kit.
Mm-hmm.
That provides
mm-hmm.
things. I need a man. Mm-hmm. And black men have always been offered to provisions. People are either going to eat or starve to death. You know, the men of Biafra, the people were starving, and they were still the men. Had to be that way through that horrendous kind of war, but it had to be that way because sometimes you are not able to feed your family. Sometimes you are not able to clothe your family. Do you then also deprive them of your manhood and of the input that a man has? Who teaches my son how to pee?
Yeah, but you're talking... I agree with you. I see that very well. But it's one thing to be in a situation where you see that you have... where you see a future, however bloody, and to be in a situation where you see no future at all.
But you are... It is incumbent...
If I know what I'm demanding of you, in some sense, makes sense. If I know the fact the kid is not eating today or tonight or tomorrow, in some way makes sense. Yeah, then I can be there. But if it doesn't make any sense, and if I don't see anything coming out of it
Will he eat if you're not there?
If you're on welfare, he won't eat if I am there. And that's the law. But I don't want to get bogged down into that. What I really mean is that, yes, a man can do that if he sees a way, if he sees that it means something. My father couldn't see that. And he was quite right. Because there wasn't anything.
There's something. Because all I know that works in the world is a relationship.
Yes, all right.
Okay, that's all that's going to work. It takes two people to have a relationship.
Yeah, but the relationship...
If you don't have a dream, fake it.
But the relationship, you can't fake a dream.
You got to fake it. Because we don't have dreams these days. How the hell can you have a dream? For what?
Well, it isn't...
So everybody's jiving, but let's jive on that level.
If I love you, I can't lie to you.
Of course you can lie to me. And you will. If you love me and you're going off with Maddie someplace, you're lying to me. Because what the hell do I care about the truth? I care if you're there. What Billie Holiday say, hush now, don't explain.
All right, I accept that.
Of course. Of course you lie to me. I don't even want to care. What does the truth matter? And why are you going to be truthful with me when you lie to everybody else? You lied when you smiled at that cracker down the job, right? Lie to me, smile. Treat me the same way you would treat him.
I can't treat you the way I treat him.
You must. Because I've caught the frowns and the anger. He's happy with you. Of course he doesn't know you're unhappy. You grin at him all day long. You come home and I catch hell. Because I love you, I get least of you. I get the very minimum. And I'm saying, you know, fake it with me. Is that too much of the black woman to ask of the black man? For 10 years so that we can get a child on his feet that says, yeah, father smiled at mother. He talked to me about school today. Who cares that you can read or can't read? Most Americans can't read. Most people can't read. They look at the pictures.
Baby, I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying, and I don't disagree. But, no, if I'm going to be honest and think about it really, I'm not so sure that that is a human possibility. If I have to smile all day, and the cat on the job, the foreman, you don't understand why I'm smiling.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I want to smile, I'm smiling because that baby needs new shoes. I can't give a performance all day on the job and come home and give a performance all night in the house.
Okay, so one of the performances will stop.
Yes. So you say, and okay, I might be willing to go with it, but who's going
to
pay the rent?
Did you back to that again? The rent will get paid.
Look, baby, I'm willing to play it your way, but you have to see my point of view.
I see your point of view, but... The rent will have to get paid.
The price of the rent is my smile.
No. I don't want you prostituting yourself. I demand.
I don't want you prostituting yourself either. One of us has got to work.
You will work it out. Because you are intelligent enough and you are sensitive enough. You are a man enough to work out a new system. Because we started off with everybody's protest now and we're back there again. As long as the assumptions are the same, nothing will change.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
So we must corner ourselves to make a new assumption.
Okay, I buy it.
In case it was sort of like left up in the air, or somebody, you know, like I didn't get it across. I really think that my father You know, Jones Giovanni is a groovy cat, you know. And he's lived with my mother now for 35 years under holy wedlock. And I think that that's good for them. You know, I think that that sort of thing worked for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the main thing, that they were able to love despite it all.
That's what we were talking about before.
Right, no, exactly.
And you, by the way, you did not have to tell me that you were your father. I knew that.
Yeah, I think he's a gas.
Yes, exactly.
I just don't want to marry him. But I think, let's talk about writing for a moment. Because it seems that most black writers at certain points always come back to explaining who they are. They always come back to the personal essay. You've written several novels. One that I happen to love a lot is Tell Me How Long the Train Has Been Gone.
I'm glad you like that.
That's I just felt mad in love. I gave copies to my friends. I was glad when it finally came out in paperback that I could afford to do what I was doing. But it seems that even though we deal in the novel and we deal in fiction or we deal in poetry, say, we always have to come back to say, you know, who are we?
Well, you know, I don't know, well, like, for example, in Train, one of the things I discovered in writing it, like I haven't done a new, you know, when I began it, that, you know, to answer your question or to deal with the question, because it's an enormous question for me. There's a moment in the bar in New York State when Leo is watching Jerry, the mm-hmm. Italian, right. And he's watching him with an older Italian who's just come to America. And Leo thinks to himself that Salvatore understood Jerry because he existed in effect already in Salvatore's imagination.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he understood Jerry because of the life that he himself had lived. But no one thinks Leo looks at me that way because I don't exist in anybody's imagination. Do you know? In, how can I put it? The reason we are forced to become more and more open, overt, is because in fact when you walk down the street, coming back now to the black man, black woman thing, mm-hmm. you're my wife and my sister and my mother. I know very well that the people who are looking at you know nothing whatever about you. Nothing at all. You know, if it's Marilyn Monroe or Pat Nixon, you know, they know or think they know, you know. But until this century begins to apprehend the experience out of which Alina Horn comes,
yeah.
you know, for example, or Ethel Waters, or you,
or
Paul
Rita
Robeson,
Franklin.
Or Aretha Franklin. Because white people, or Ray Charles, they don't know what that comes out of. There's no metaphor in their experience for it. Or the metaphor in their own experience is so deeply buried and so frightening. Because you see, the reason that people think it's important to be white is they think it's important not to be black. They think it's important to be white because white means you are civilized, and being black means you're not civilized. And it's yet to be apprehended in any way whatever that in fact I will not be able to walk the streets or even look at you or you at me or do whatever we do in our terrible days, day to day, if we were not civilized. You know, but we represent a civilization. I don't mean merely literally the African civilization or the Indian civilization or whatever. I mean a sense of life, which is the only thing that civilizes anybody, which for mercantile commercial reasons, to put it a little bit too simply, the rise of Europe attempted to destroy. I say attempted to destroy because it did not in fact destroy it. It dispersed it, and under that pressure, it began to become something else. What it comes to is that I am civilized in a way that Englishmen are not, mm-hmm. you know, because I've had to depend on a principle which Europeans have learned to distrust.
Let's say.
Does that make sense to you, though?
Sort of on one level, and because I tend to be slow sometimes, not sort of on another. But what I'm trying to ask maybe is, that's a dirty trick, niggas, for a living. What I'm trying to ask, though, like, do you think that you would ever write, say, a work of fiction, or maybe even a work of nonfiction that did not include white people. That was just about some groovy black people that you knew. You know, in terms of characters, in terms of who you're speaking to and why. You think that's, I mean, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, I do. Well, how can I answer it? I'm working on something now in which there are no white people. But I'm also working on a novel which, for the most part, takes place in Europe. And it's, to put it again, to simply concern the situation of an Arab in France. Mm-hmm. Now, in that context, I don't know. You know, the Arab is certainly a nigger in France, or he would be a Puerto Rican in New York, you know, mm-hmm. or a Mexican in California. And what I'm trying to... It's very dangerous to talk about something you haven't finished, but...
Yeah, but, I will understand that.
What I'm trying to get at is... my apprehension, anyway, of the crisis of this age, you know, and the crisis is something to do with identity, and that is something to do with buried histories. Mm-hmm. Not merely our history has been buried, but as we said before, when I was talking about, you know, my homework on Brixton, doing homework on the English working class, mm-hmm. that history has been buried too. Mm-hmm. No, we were talking about liberation, we were talking about writing. What a writer is always doing, whether or not he knows it, is he has to go to the source, because there isn't anything else to work from. You know, you can't work from other people's assumptions. You have to work out of what you discover are your own. Mm-hmm. And your own assumptions come out of something much deeper than you. It takes a long time before you realize that there is a connection, in fact, between Tell Me Along, The Train's Been Gone, and Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. You know, or what Ray Charles does with dreary little anthems no one ever dreamed of hearing until he got his hands on them and put our experience into them. You know?
Mm-hmm. All of a sudden. Right down then.
Yes, for example. You know, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Fantastic.
Well, that's what I mean by energy. It seems to me that's the assignment of an artist. Because the people who produced him, I am not responsible to anybody but the people who produced me. You know, whether or not they knew they produced me, whether or not they wanted to produce me. Mm-hmm. You know, I cannot drive a truck. And I can't sing a song. But the people who produced me pretended to me to do something which they knew before I knew that I might be able to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's a... And I keep coming back to this kind of a thing, but there's a whole movement or something that says that we have to write only about black people, and you have to... You know what I mean? That there's a little thing that says we're going
to
dictate...
Look, the very first thing that a writer has to face... is that he cannot be told what to write. Nobody asked me to be a writer in a way, you know, they didn't know in any case. No, in any case, I chose it. Since I'm a man, I'd assume I chose it. Perhaps, you know, in fact. perhaps, in fact, I didn't choose it. But,
you know, she would chose it.
But in any case, you know, the one thing you have to do is try to tell the truth. And what everyone overlooks is that in order to do it, when the book comes out, it may hurt you. Mm-hmm. But in order to do it, it had to hurt me first. You know, I can only tell you about yourself as much as I can face about myself. You know, it's happened to everybody who's tried to live. You know, you go through your life for a long time, you think that no one has ever suffered the way I've suffered. You know, my God. And then you realize, you read something, you hear something, and you realize that your suffering does not isolate you. That your suffering is your bridge. Mm-hmm. That many people have suffered before you. Many people are suffering around you. And always will. And all you can do is bring, hopefully, a little light into that suffering. Enough light so the person who is suffering can begin to comprehend his suffering and begin to live with it and begin to change it, to change his situation. Mm-hmm. We don't change anything. All we can do is invest people with the morale to change it for themselves.
I agree with that. I'm pursuing this because it's something that keeps coming up that personally I'm interested in what you have to say. But the same argument, I agree with you as a matter of fact, but the same argument you say, they say, well, why should a writer be free to write what he wants when, say, a teacher is not free to teach what he wants, or a postman...
A teacher who is not free to teach is not a teacher, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
You know, if that's I assume that responsibility, then I've got to be free to teach the way I see it. Angela Davis is precisely in trouble, not for all those nonsensical reasons given by those impeccable, honorable men like the governor of California and the head of the FBI. Not for any of those reasons, but because she was trying to teach. And to teach in the situation in which black people in America find themselves, really to teach, is a revolutionary act.
You solved it for me, because it's something I keep hearing. And they always say, well, why should the artist be free to do what he wants to do when nobody else is?
The artist is not free to do what he wants to do. The artist is free to do what he has to do.
When, in fact, everyone else should pursue along those lines. Yeah, yeah. That's wild. I hadn't thought about it that way. It's God's truth. I've been having revelations a lot lately. It's a personal thing. So what do you think, about the development, say, of the whole black literature trend from, say, Richard Wright till me?
All right, it's a good...
It's a good cutoff period.
It's a good beginning period. It's a good beginning period.
Thank you.
All right, arbitrarily, Richard, right to you.
Or Chester Himes, since Chester goes beyond Richard, and since I happen to adore Chester.
Oh, Chester, yes.
Yeah. Chester's exciting to me because when you go from, say...
Well, Chester's got guts.
Oh, my God. Lonely Crusade, you talk about it. Lonely Crusade.
Which I didn't like when I was 22.
I loved it. When I read it, I found a first edition. I won't even tell you what I paid for it. And simply adored it. Mm-hmm. And I could see why everybody hated it.
Let me make a confession. Mm-hmm. When the book came out, I was working for the New Leader.
Oh. I see why.
Wait a minute. Hold on. And I said working for the New Leader. I was doing book reviews for $10 a shot. And going through my own changes, and also, this is very important, really, I was in a kind of political crisis because I had been a kind of communist, when I was 19. Whatever it means, 19. And I learned a great deal about the American Communist Party. It's a very...
Mm-hmm. All I did read is an outsider.
An indescribable organization.
It's crazy. Well, I dislike it.
But since the book, in a sense, for me, had the aura of the things I was battling, the political elements I was battling, mm-hmm. the book frightened me. Because in those years... I don't want to get sidetracked with the Communist Party, but in those years, the Communist Party was, in a sense, the only haven for a young American black writer. It was also a terrible trap, in which most people lost their lives, because the American communists were also, after all, Americans, And you worked for them like you worked for everybody else, mm-hmm. except since they were communists, you're not supposed to say you worked for them.
I know.
And all of that complicated my reaction to both Chester and to Richard, in a sense which I can't exactly, it took me a long time to understand, mm-hmm. But it's a question of generations again,
It's a question of, they're both a generation.
Yes. It's a question of generations. I had to get to be a man myself in quite another context, and since in effect after the Second World War, the American Communist Party was a very different organization in a sense, and the black situation became different too. There was no haven at all for black writers, so I split. Mm-hmm. I had to split, otherwise I would be dead, and figure it out on the stones of Paris. Do you know what I mean? Okay. Now, Richard left a tremendous testimony, you know, mm-hmm. about a time that will never be seen again, in which your son will read about the way he reads about Greece, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it came out of a set of assumptions, you know, which a boy 21, that's what I was then, had to fight if he was going to live at all, you know. You know, because what you couldn't accept was that pain. You couldn't accept that past as being your present and still more your future. You know, mm-hmm. you had to find some way of dealing with it. Of dealing with it. And to deal with it meant you had to find another vocabulary. You had to risk your life. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to risk it all. You had to go for broke. You know,
which both Chester and Richard.
Now I can see. Now I can see. What I owe to Richard, what I owe to Chester, what I owe to Langston, what I owe to W.E.B. Du Bois, what I owe to Frederick Douglass. But I could not see that when I was 20. Mm-hmm. You know? I don't think anybody can see that at 20. You know? Because you see, they were, on one level, simply more exalted victims. I still remember a boy named Angelo Herndon who wrote a book called Let Me Live.
Right.
You know, I have no idea what happened to him. You know.
He's probably dead.
He's probably
like
dead, you know, like everybody else. And that's your future.
Yeah.
You know, and it takes a long time before you accept what has been given to you from your past. You know, what we call black literature is really summed up for me by the whole career, let's say, of Bessie Smith, Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin. Because how it's been handed down since we couldn't read or write, as far as they knew, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was, at one time, after all, not 1,000 years ago, a crime to be able to read if you were black. You know, it was punishable by law. Mm-hmm. You know, if we had to smuggle information somehow, and we did it through our music, and we did it in the church. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking before about, you know, the church you went to visit, if you know. I thought about the Apollo Theater. Last time I saw Aretha,
yeah.
And what did she do with the Apollo Theater but turn it into a gospel church service, you know?
Everybody
really,
testified.
You know, and that's, and that's true religion,
yeah.
You know? And anything a black writer is trying to do has to come out of that. I don't mean it has to be limited to that, but it comes out of that because the standards which come from Greece and Rome, for example, you know, even the standards come from what we call the Christian the Jewish Christian ethic, are very dubious when you try to apply them to your own life.
Yeah, dubious, you know. Yes.
I use the word advisedly, yes. You know. So you have to use what in fact you have as distinguishing what you've been told you have.
Mm-hmm. There's a question someplace, I'm trying to form it. And again, I guess I'm stuck with Chester because, among other things, he's one of my favorite writers, and I've read everything to date, including his autobiography that he's written, so he's easier for me. But if you move from, say, Iffy Hollis, Let Him Go,
mm-hmm.
right into Third Generation Castor,
mm-hmm.
the first on that,
mm-hmm.
that group of, okay, then he had to stop. He left the States also.
Mm-hmm.
He left the States much later than all of you are,
mm-hmm.
in terms of age.
Not much, well, later in terms of age.
He was much older.
Yeah.
Then he began Pink Toes and went into the Coffin at Gravedigger mm-hmm. Jones, which everybody assumed was safe. You dig it? Then
everybody.
He did. Well, most people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That they could publish him because they said, mm-hmm. oh, it's just a detective mm-hmm. story. Then he did, of course, the master detective story, Blind Man with a Pistol.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, who's the murderer?
It's
he said, the state's a murderer.
It's not a detective story at all. It's an allegory.
It's fantastic. Exactly. But again, I'm talking about Chester and Chester's Pursuit of Truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because Richard Wright died before he quit pursuing truth, or was murdered.
That's
before
right.
he quit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But
mm-hmm.
Chester could say, okay, I will pursue truth in this way, which mm-hmm. looks a little better, that you can make a movie out of it if
mm-hmm.
you want to.
Mm-hmm.
It'll
mm-hmm.
still be true. And then takes it right to Blind Man with
the Sweetheart,
pistol.
It's the same thing that we were doing on the plantation when they thought it was saying, steal away to Jesus. And I was telling you, it's time to split.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
But why do we always get hung up in, if I can use that kind of a word, why do we as black writers seem to be so hung up in the truth? If I can, I'm asking
because,
this as a younger person.
Because
you
the responsibility
know I mean?
Of a writer is excavate only where I can find. Again, the experience of the people who produce them, because the act of writing is the intention of it, the root of it, is liberation. Look, this is why no tyrant in history was able to read, but every single one of them burned the books.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah.
That is why no one yet believes, really, that there is such a thing as a black writer. A black writer is still a freak. You know?
Maybe even a black
writer. A dancing dog. We don't yet exist in the imagination of this century. And we cannot afford to play games. There's too much at stake.
But there has to be a way to do what we do and survive, which is, to me, what seems to be missing.
Sweetheart, our ancestors taught us how to do that. We have survived until now. Hugh Chesterton is a very good example. You know, and people may think Blind Man's Epistle is a detective story. He didn't write it for the people who think it's a detective story.
Yeah, that's a great book, though. You know, and it's very underestimated.
But you see what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Look, there was a law, let me say, a very brutal thing. A very brutal thing, but it has to be said, I think. There was a law in America not 1,000 years ago which stated that a black man has no rights. This was a law,
yeah,
which a white man is bound to respect. Now, we have come to this. I can say now that the people who framed that law have no standards which I am bound to respect. That's the way the wheel goes round. No white critic can judge my work. I'd be a fool if I depended on that judgment. You know what I'm trying to say?
Exactly. But I'm not sure that anyone at this stage, I personally hate critics. Maybe they're right. I'm not sure that anyone...
Actually, I love critics, but they're very rare. A real critic is very rare.
A real critic, to criticize a real book, would have to write a book of equal length, which case is a waste of time, because you could read the book that they're criticizing.
That's right.
Whether it be good or bad, whether it's to explain, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Mostly, though, the young critics are, I think, just trying to hurt people. And the young black critics try to hurt people, I think, essentially. And the white critics don't understand. In many cases, they would like to praise it, but they don't understand.
I will be able to accept critical judgments the day I understand that they understand Ray Charles.
It never happened.
No. When that day comes, then, okay, that's a new ball game. You'll play it, you know, we'll see.
I would rather a 14-year-old kid said I didn't like that essay or didn't like that poem. I could relate to that because I know that he read it and that he understood it.
I held myself together by the judgments of a few people whom I trusted.
Yeah. It's the way it has to be.
Who I knew would not give me any...
Beep. Yeah. It's a funny situation to be in these days because everybody's trying to delineate what you're doing. And to me, what's important is that things are being done.
Look, baby, I know that my mother worked for them for a long time. And I know she came to the house every morning, left every night. And they did not know anything about her at all.
I can dig it.
When I discover who my mother is, they may be able to tell me who I am. Until they do that, they can't... Until they do the one thing, until they know who their maid is, they can't tell me anything about me.
Yeah.
And still less about you.
You know, we were talking earlier about the junkie situation.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm kind of... You said that it related to, like, that whole sexual thing. I'm kind of curious.
Well...
We don't have to discuss it.
No. I was thinking about something a junkie once said to me. It was a very good friend of mine. musician. And he said, you're a junkie too. I thought to myself, am I? You know, was it something in the way he said it made me, because I came to the same streets. Mm-hmm. I knew why he was a junkie, and I knew what had happened to me. He said, you're a junkie because you talk to yourself. I had to think about that. And I thought about it, and I... What he meant was, you have to listen to your own sound. Mm-hmm. You've got to find a way to listen to your own sound. You live in a kind of echo chamber. And it's true, you know. And it also demands a terrible turning away from many things, you know. Mm. On one level, I must say, some of the junkies I have known, I've been among the most valuable people I've ever met in my life. Because they know, something. I'm not even trying to be mystical about it, mm-hmm. but they know their situation. George Cain wrote a book called Blues Child Baby,
right.
which is a tremendous, tremendous book, and the first honest book I've ever read about the condition of a junkie. But it really is exaggerated, or rather, you know, made clear the situation of being a black man in America. You could even go further than that and say the situation of being a white man, this being a man in this civilization. Because in fact,
frustrated the hell out of me.
It's a tremendous book.
I hear this one.
Yeah, but read it again.
I will.
Read it again. It's a very frightening book. But you have to, in order to live, finally, make so many difficult and dangerous choices that the one thing you really are trying to save is what you lose. And what you're trying to save is one thing. Your ability to touch another human being or be touched by that person. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what you're really trying to save. And when you realize you can't save that either, you hit the needle. You know? And it is one more way. After all, the junk comes from somewhere. I don't care how many cowboys they throw to the wolves and how many, you know, drives against drugs. I lived in the ghetto, and I watched it. You know,
I think that's the biggest hype in the world.
You buy drugs in the ghetto like you buy whiskey in the deep south from the sheriff.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's part of a criminal conspiracy to destroy black people. The proof of this is nobody cared as long as our kids were dying. It's only when it got, you know, the plague spread outward up to Scarsdale, Westchester, and white kids started dying. Then we have a drug problem.
They have a drug problem. No. I think it's a big hype. And I'm not on anything, so I don't know it from the inside. I don't try to. But all it's done is to divide the people who are not on drugs. Because the junkie and the pusher go on.
The junkie and the pusher do
go
on.
They have a love affair.
But
everybody's going to break them
I
up.
Think the only
but
thing
you
we,
and I fight about it.
I think... Really, seriously, something my brother said to me years ago, he got robbed by a junkie, right? Okay. And he was very hot, you know, he was very angry. But then he realized that the junkie didn't have any choice but to rob him. Did you know that the whole point was to set you at a division, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I decided after that, you know, that the junkie is a victim like me. A brother like me, you know. Mm-hmm. I ain't no better than he is. I really am not any better than he is. We're in the same trap. We're in the same trap for the same reasons. Do you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same way, you know, that the great powers can use a tribal war in some unknown country, you know, set them against each other, then blame both parties and put the money in Switzerland, and they still own the country.
Yep.
You know?
But both countries are to blame. Because they have to stop and think about it.
Of course. Of course.
I mean, Nigeria just finished with that horrendous fiasco, which is what you're talking
about.
One
of the examples that I mean.
Yeah.
You know.
There was no point in it.
But, baby, it takes people a very long time to learn a very little. If you consider your own life, like I consider my life, you know, when I think how little I've learned in, after all, a fairly long time, and what it has caused me to learn whatever I've learned, and then to face whatever it is I've learned, and then to act on it. It takes a long time.
I don't think that,
do you see what I mean, though?
Sure, but I don't think that I'm all that like different or exceptional or something like that. But I think there's certain things. Well, first of all, I don't need anybody to feel better than. You see? And I think that, like, that junkie hype, that whole war hype, that whole homosexual hype, you know what I mean? That whole he's not black hype. I don't need it because it doesn't make me any better.
People invent categories in order to feel safe.
But that's
white people invented black people to give white people an identity.
No. But
cats who think of themselves as straight invent faggots so they can sleep with them.
That's true.
Without becoming a faggot themselves.
Somehow.
You know.
It's a hype, though.
If you're a writer, you're forced to look behind the word into the meaning of the word. You know.
Actions produced by the word.
Yes. You're responsible for what that word means.
I agree.
You know. You have to find a way to use that word to liberate the energy in that word, so it has a positive effect on the lives of people. There is such a thing as a living word.
The word was made flesh. That's
right. That's not a mystical statement.
No, it's true. I've seen it. I'm just always amazed at the number of hypes, though, that people go for. You know, like if you don't eat meat now, you're somehow better than somebody who has a pork chop.
Look, baby.
And what does it matter?
I told you. I told you before. You know, some things seem new to you.
It doesn't seem new to you. No. It's one of the problems. I just can't get over how people continue the BS when we see that it has nothing to do.
Because they're afraid to let it go.
But they're perpetuating their own destruction.
You tell that to some white South African farmer.
I can't tell that to some black guy. You know what I mean?
That you're buying the destruction of your children.
He doesn't have to hear it. I mean,
yes,
see, we talk across counter purposes sometimes. White South African does not have to hear me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If his children are shut tough. If I walk down the street and tell some cat, listen, so what if you don't eat meat and you eat imported sugar? You're a nigger. You understand? He gets mad at me.
Yeah, but you have to understand why he gets mad at you.
Because
first of all, he ain't mad at you. He's mad because what you told him is the truth. He's mad because you peeped his whole card. He's mad because he is trying to establish an illusion which you are breaking. He's mad the same way those terrible preachers in the church I grew up in were mad, you know, when I began to ask them questions about what does this really mean? You know, when I began to watch their lives, they were nothing but pimps and hustlers, really.
Yeah.
You know, wrapped in a cloak, you know, in the blood of Jesus and all that jazz, you know. And you ask them a real question, they hate you. Of course they hate you.
But it just...
It's so self-destructive. But it's got nothing to do with you. Of course it's self-destructive. Yes, I know that. But
how are we going to get over that and into...
Look, baby. I've written off my generation, you know, completely. I don't talk to them. Let's go back to the kid. You talk to those people who can hear you, and you save what you can save. And you are not going to live forever either, you know.
Thank God.
Yeah, what you have to do is make it possible for others to live. You know, that's the only reason to be here. You know, who needs the rest of it, really?
It's true.
You know.
It's so weird, though. It's so... It's counterproductive.
That's very bad English.
That's very bad. Would you say that, like, to sort of sum things up here, would you say, like, you tend to be optimistic? You know, on those kind of levels?
When I pick your kid up in my arms, yes. I look at you, yes. You know.
Not me.
Yes.
I'm very pessimistic.
Oh, no, you're not as pessimistic as you think you are.
I'm not pessimistic.
You got far too much energy to be as pessimistic as you think you are.
I'm pretty pessimistic, though.
No, I think you're pretty realistic. I think you're pretty cool.
For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin. Today is Wednesday, December 24th. Here are some headlines. The Trump administration is deploying about 350 National Guard troops to New Orleans ahead of New Year's Eve as part of his immigration crackdown in Democrat-led cities and with the support of Louisiana's Republican governor. New Orleans has actually seen a decrease in violent crime rates, leading some local leaders to say the deployment is unwarranted and could cause fear in the community. The troops will remain active in New Orleans at least through February's Mardi Gras celebration. In related news, yesterday Chicago became the first city to have a Trump administration deployment of National Guard troops blocked by the Supreme Court. Trump claims the soldiers are needed to protect federal agents conducting aggressive immigration enforcement operations in the city. The justices decided on a 6-3 vote that the Trump administration had not met the legal burden needed to warrant an exception to the Posse Comitatus Act and had not shown that Chicago was not able to execute the laws of the land without federal military intervention. Conservative Justices Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, and Neil Gorsuch dissented from the opinion. In other news, the Department of Education confirmed yesterday that it will resume garnishing the wages of student loan borrowers in default starting on January 7th. Garnishing means the government can directly take from paychecks up to 15% of a borrower's pay to apply to debts such as student loans, child support, or taxes, but must leave at least $217 per week for living expenses. The practice was suspended during the COVID-19 pandemic. About 1,000 borrowers in default are expected to receive notices for the first week of January, but that number will increase each month. As of last April, the Department of Education said that more than 5 million borrowers were in default, meaning a payment has not been made in 270 days. In more news, a new federal lawsuit filed on Monday in the U.S. District Court challenges the Kennedy Center Board of Trustees' decision to rename the cultural institution to the Donald J. Trump and the John F. Kennedy Memorial Center for the Performing Arts. The suit was filed by Ohio Congresswoman Joyce Beatty, an ex officio trustee of the center. The suit alleges the board exceeded its authority granted by Congress and requests that a judge declare it to be void. The lawsuit comes as President Trump pursues a campaign to rename institutions in the nation's capital in his own image. And independence has been an ongoing concern for Democrats regarding President Trump's pick to lead the Federal Reserve. And just yesterday, the president added new fuel to that fire. In a lengthy post on Truth Social, President Trump says he wants the next chairman of the Fed to lower interest rates if the markets are doing well, adding that, quote, anybody that disagrees with me will never be the Fed chairman, close quote. Trump has said selecting a successor to Jerome Powell would give him his biggest opportunity yet to reshape the institution. In her own post on X yesterday, Senator Elizabeth Warren wrote, Trump could not be more clear. He's going to install a puppet that serves his needs, not the American people. For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Beneath the silver sky, moonbeams and rainbows.